Welcome to the Aftershock Central podcast. Travis and myself. Ronnie has been lost in the Red Realm, so he will not be joining us tonight.
Dude, I thought he was locked up in Sochi. We miss you, Ronnie.
Lies, we don't miss you. We don't! We have a ton of books to talk about. And by ton, I mean three. Is that a ton? Is three a ton?
It's a healthy amount.
It's a healthy dose of books.
It's just right.
Just right. If you haven't read the book, spoiler alert, we'll be going in depth. Wow, I don't think we've ever done a spoiler alert, have we?
No, it's first spoiler pause.
All right, cool. Let's get on to the books. Let's kick off. I want to kick off with Beyonders number 3. How about that?
Cool.
Beyonders number 3, written by Paul Jenkins with art by Wesley Sinclair and letters by Marshall Dillon. So, where to begin with this book? Where to begin? We have some new mysteries in this particular issue. In particular, the mystery of Roanoke and how that relates to this whole thing. So let me ask you.
Mm-hmm.
I got a question for you. Do you feel like there's maybe just too many mysteries?
They're definitely trying to link up as many different things as they can, right? Like all of the, like the big enticing mysteries and conspiracy theories, like they're trying to put them all together. And definitely a lot of real estate of every issue is not only devoted to giving the backstory of all of these different like mysteries, but then the rationale for linking them up, you know? So it feels like a lot of every issue is just like getting all of that like plot and information in there, you know?
Yeah. I agree with that. It's, there was a lot in this one, man. I felt like I'll be honest. I felt a little overwhelmed with this issue. Because I think, you know, we go on this journey, right? So Jake and the girl, what's the girl's name?
Noreen?
Right. Yes.
Noreen?
Jake and Noreen and the dog go to Roanoke Island because, you know, after the second issue, they discover these coordinates around the world. So they send a team to investigate one of these coordinates, and there's a scroll there. And something happens, and apparently the whole crew gets killed. We don't know why or how. But underneath the scroll, it says Croatoan. And so immediately Jake is like, okay, I know what this is. And she's like, yeah, we need to go to Croatia. And he's like, no, we're not going to Croatia. It's Croatoan. We need to go to Roanoke Island. So they go to the island, they find the old tree where the Croatoan was carved on, and there's a well there, so they go down the well, and they discover like a Native American statue with another manuscript, and the manuscript ends up being tied to everything they found in the second issue. They run whatever the Aramaic writing is on the manuscript through their computer, through the algorithm they devised in last issue. And basically it foretells them going to Roanoke Island and finding the manuscript.
What they get when they run through the computer basically seems like a message that basically describes them in perfect detail and says like basically, And this is going to begin the sequence that leads to the end of the world, or so it would seem.
Right. Well, and it also, I forgot to mention, it also mentions Edgar Allan Poe, who's discussed in this issue, and Amelia Earhart, who's also discussed, and apparently they're both Beyonders. And so it pretty much foretells the last 100 years of the search for this particular manuscript in Roanoke Island. And the end of the world.
Yeah, and that stuff is legit too. I did a little Googling and like those Croatoa references are legit, you know.
Oh, do tell.
It just it was very quick Googling, but like it is like written in Amelia Earhart's diary, and like that was the dying words of Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, interesting. See, I did not know that. I mean, I knew a little bit about Roanoke Island. So when they actually talk about the guy that sailed to England and then was delayed for 3 years and came back and everybody was gone, that part of the story I knew. I just wasn't aware of the Earhart and the Edgar Allan Poe stuff. That's cool.
Yeah. And I mean, like, like, that's the thing is, like, this all seems like pretty, a lot of the pieces seem to be very well researched. But I think that, you know, the general audience probably doesn't necessarily know all of these, like, trivia things. So you have to explain it to us along with, you know, the characters, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's cool, though, you know, like for those who are motivated, if you go and research this stuff, there is kind of a foundation for it.
Yeah, I mean, I do like some of the stuff. I immediately thought Roanoke Island when I saw the Croatoa thing on there, and when she's mentioning Croatia, I was like, no! And then Jake says Roanoke Island, I was like, okay, good. We're back on track. So that made me feel pretty good. Because, you know, I wish Ronnie was here, because every time we talk about Beyonders, like, Ronnie and I are really all about this book, right? Because there's all this crazy conspiracy stuff that Ronnie and I are into. And so it's cool to see it in a book like this.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I don't know how many people actually pick up on all the little bits and pieces.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like it relies so heavily on connecting all of those conspiracy theories that, like, what you were saying the last time about the kind of contortions you had to get to get to building this device and making the map and all that was like, what? You know, like, you know, it's very much kind of building those plot details, and I think it's less of the characters and you know, like, the themes and stuff, you know, like, I still don't really know what's going on per se. But let me ask you this, okay? Because I feel like this is a significant thing that I picked up on in this mm-hmm. issue. Like, one of the things that really jumped out to me was just, like, I feel like they keep coming back to kind of, like, deja vu, or, like, this feels familiar. Intuition is just kind of, like, you know, forgotten memories that are coming back. You know, like Jake is in the cave and he's like, this all seems very familiar. So I feel like there is something, there's going to be a reveal at some point to get to that, given the amount of times that they reference that in this issue, you know?
Yeah. And I wonder what that is. And I'm sure that's going to be partially the explanation on why these people have been following Jake his entire life, right? Because I think ultimately that's the biggest mystery that we have. Is not so much everything that's going on, but why Jake?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, who is this kid?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I've got a bunch of kind of weird ideas about what could be going on. You know, like I think also, you know, that idea ties into what they started the issue with, where Jake is saying, this is too easy. You know, I'm figuring all this out too easy. And he like assumes that that's because he doesn't understand it. And there's another shoe that's going to drop. But it almost suggests to me, like, he's, you know, somehow he's connected with whoever solved this stuff or set this stuff up in the past, or, you know, like, there's recurring lifetimes or time travel and memory erasure, or like something there that connects those ideas. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
So I'm curious what your theory is then.
I don't have a working theory yet, you know, but it, I don't know. It almost is something like, you know, he's, I don't know. Should we rule out time travel? Is it possible that, like, he traveled into the past and set stuff up for himself to discover, you know? I don't know.
No, I think we can rule out time travel. I think based on the way things work so far, there is no time travel. It just somehow relates to this, I don't know, like, magical, mystical, like, formula that kind of is able to fairly accurately predict future events based on past events. I don't think that's necessarily a time travel thing.
All right, because that, That was the only thing that I was grasping at, I guess, was, like, when the first team, like Galilee or whatever, goes down, before they die, they say something to the effect of, like, oh my god, his face. And I'm like, well, what if that means that that's Jake or something that's doing that? But it's, like, timey-wimey Jake.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't put it past per se. I think maybe anything's on the table, given how crazy this is already.
Mm-hmm.
But that also jumped out to me as a significant thing that you would put in there about his face. So maybe that just implies that it's somebody that they know, or just somebody with some kind of jacked up face. I don't know.
Very well could be. Yeah, I'm not quite sure yet. I haven't come up with a theory myself. So I'm not sure where it is that we need to be going with Jake's background story. I just hope it's not something like super simple, like I don't know, he knocked his head on the ground or whatever. Or he's going through some like mental delusions. I don't know, like whatever, some kind of mental health issue. You know what I mean?
Or like repressed memories or something.
Yeah, yeah, yep, something like that. All right, cool. You wanna?
All right,
yeah.
I was curious, for those keeping track, I assume that you're thinking about, like, the code. Have you been doing any work on that?
I have not since the first issue. I'm going to wait until the final issue to work something up.
Okay.
Yep. Right now, all I'm doing is basically just writing down all the symbols.
Okay, cool. All right. Final thought was just that there's one more weird moment in the issue that I thought might be significant. If not, it was just weird, where he's talking to Nereen, like, kind of before they go out on their mission to Croatoa or whatever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she goes, you know, thank you, you know, and he says, for what? And then she says, oh, like, you'll see, you'll find out, you know. Or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was strange. So I don't know whether like that in my reading made me suspicious of her. Like, why wouldn't you say what you mean? So yeah, at this point I'm kind of like all questions and no answers, if that makes sense.
Yep. No, makes sense. Makes sense. All right, cool. Let's rate it up. I guess.
All right, I'll go 3.75 out of 5.
Yeah, I think I'm right around there with you. You know what? I'll go with the same score, 3.75 out of 5. I think the book's still solid. I think this one felt a little weaker for me overall. And I don't know what it is. You know, the art's still strong. The story's really, really interesting. I just felt like this issue in particular felt extra MacGuffin-y to me. And so as a result, I need to just bring it down a notch.
Yeah, so like slow the roll a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I understand that we're still building up the story, but I want to start receiving some answers, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, do we know how long it's going to go? Like how far out it's solicited?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think it's just 5 issues.
Yeah, I assume so.
Yeah. So we have a couple more.
Well, it'll probably start getting closer pretty soon.
Yeah. Yep. All right, let's go on from there to Baby Teeth, number 13, written by Donnie Cates, art by Gary Brown, colors by Mark Englert, and letters by Taylor Esposito. Oh, man. Dude, I released an episode of my other show today, and actually, funny enough, Gary Brown was the artist and Taylor Esposito was the letterer, and I felt compelled to do that on that show as well. And I was like, damn it. That's an ACP thing.
Yeah, dude. Justin Bieber's going to cat after you, man.
yeah, whatever. He can stay over in Canada. All right. So, issue 13. This was actually, I thought a quite a good issue, even though part of me feels like maybe we should be beyond this point by now. God, I feel like such a downer today.
No, man, I mean, I know what you mean. Like, you know, I feel like some of these issues for Baby Teeth maybe feel slightly decompressed.
Yeah.
like as far as like you don't necessarily travel a lot of mileage in each issue.
Yep.
But I would say that there, you know, like there's at least one or two things in there. It's like, oh, holy crap, we're finally there. You know, it's like the devil finally appears. You know, like we don't know what's up. But at least he's there, and I assume we're going to start to get it in the next issue.
Yeah. So basically, we have the whole crew's back together again, right? Basically, they have all gone to hell. They see what's the shark called? I love that shark thing. The Strelegadon.
The Strelegadon.
I thought that was pretty sweet. It's basically like a shark with spider legs.
I thought it was a scorpion.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
And it breathes fire, right?
It does breathe fire.
Yeah. Dude, that thing was tight. And also, like, the Chinooki demon, like, now talks, and he's got a name.
Yeah. Yeah. What's his name?
It's like, Walter or something, if you remember.
It's Marty, goddammit.
All right, well, that's not really Martin, so... Unless you go by Marty... Sometimes
listen,
I don't think you can
listen.
Take credit.
You say tomato, I say tomato. That's all I'm saying.
Got it.
Yeah. So yeah, the little raccoon thing. His name is Marty, like somebody we know. That's awesome. He's my new favorite character right now.
He's awesome, dude. And like I thought it was interesting that he works for Clark ostensibly, you know, like Clark and Heather.
Yep.
And he's kind of like fighting against the devil. So I don't know, that calls into question kind of like what's his deal, where it comes from, and why he's not basically serving the devil like most of the other things in the Red Realm.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know kind of what the dynamics are in the Red Realm with all these creatures. Because even he's not the only one that doesn't really abide by those rules, right? Because we saw, I think... Mm-hmm. The first time they went to the Red Realm, you know what? It was in the flashback sequence when we learn about the, I can't remember the lady's name. The first devil kid.
Olivia.
Olivia and her kid. When we're getting their flashback scenes, like they explicitly talk about certain creatures that didn't follow the rules of the Red Realm and like they would attack her kid, even though technically they shouldn't because he's the devil's kid.
Yeah, like the rhino squid don't serve the devil. So like, yeah, I mean, I guess that points to bigger politics in the Red Realm.
Well, not just that. I found it very curious because we get to see the devil's face at the end. And, I mean, he seems a little young to be the devil. So my assumption is he's not like the actual devil. Maybe he's like the devil's kid.
Yeah, I mean, or, you know, like as a supernatural being, you know, maybe he just has eternal youth or something, or can present how he wants to.
Sure, possible. But he does look very young.
Yeah, and Simon said, you know, like, the devil is beautiful,
yeah,
you know,
right.
In this issue.
Right. Yeah,
so that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I find it curious that creatures of the Red Realm would recognize the devil's kid. But Satan himself doesn't recognize his own kid.
Well, not only that, he seems to be kind of oblivious that he has any children.
Yeah, right.
And he has a comment to the effect of like, I have a child and it should be like, I have two children.
Yeah.
You know, like did he didn't know about Simon from his time there and like now he's learning about them both at the same time.
Well, surely he met Simon, right? Maybe that's just my assumption. I don't know if they...
We don't really know how they got back still,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. Yep, and they never explicitly said anything about meeting Satan. Although Olivia does seem to know quite a bit about it, so... And so does Simon. That's why I assumed they would know who he is, and therefore he would know who Simon is, but maybe not. And maybe that's maybe that's why I think this is not the real devil. Right, maybe that's what we'll find out in the next one.
Yeah, or maybe it's generational. You know, like it's like the devil's kid or something.
Yeah.
And you know, like Simon is his brother, quote unquote.
Yep.
Or something.
Yeah, there you go. Something like that. Yeah, pretty cool issue though. I love that we're in the Red Realm. I want to spend more time in the Red Realm, but at the same time, I want the story to move along a little bit faster than it is. A little bit.
I think it's actually moving at a pretty decent clip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I could have used a little bit more of, you know, Heather and Clark, kind of what they were up to, you know, because we mostly were seeing, you know, Sadie and the rest of them, you know, first in the real world and now, like, on the other side. So I feel like we saw a glimpse of Heather and Clark in the Red Realm, and then in this issue, they're right away to, like, oh, where are all these things going? Let's follow them. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, we're back with the group.
Yeah.
But maybe just nothing significant happened, per se. You know, just surviving.
Sure. All right, let's write this one up. I'll go first on this one. I'm still going to give it a 4 out of 5, you know? I still love this book.
Yeah, dude. 4 out of 5 for sure. Solid.
All right, let's go to the next one. This one, I'm curious to know what you thought. Dead Kings number 1. It's written by Steve Orlando with art by Matthew Dow Smith, colors by Lauren Afe, and letters by Thomas Maurer. So there's a lot going on in this book, and I found that interesting for a first issue, because to me, a first issue should kind of give you the lay of the land, basically, right? It doesn't have to explain everything, but it should introduce the main characters, kind of what the story is about, and then let you roam free after that. I think this book succeeds in some of that, right? So we learn about Sasha and who he is. We learn about this Thrice Nine place that he's from. But there's a lot that we have no idea what it means, right? So, like, they keep talking about Russ and Thrice Nine and other places. We learn about Stone Mary and some other characters. And there's no real, like, backstory as to how this world operates.
Yes. No, I was gonna ask you, dude, in terms of, like, basic premise, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, do you think that this is, like, for lack of a better term, an alternate history story? You know, and by that I mean they make references to kings, you know?
Yep.
Like, basically, like, first of all, you know, Russ, I think we can assume is Russia, you know?
Right.
Like, I think that's actually the Cyrillic word for Russia.
Yep.
So, you know, like, the confusing thing being there that they reference, you know, like, all the kings have died, and, like, the courts are now running wild, you know? But mm-hmm. obviously where we are, there hasn't been a king in power of any of these seemingly applicable territories in a long time.
Right.
You know, so either it's some kind of far-flung future where monarchy has returned and then gets overthrown, or it's a totally different history where kings persisted, and that brings us to some kind of near future dystopia that we're now seeing.
So from my understanding of the way this book was solicited, this is in the far-flung future. It is a post-apocalyptic story. So, you know, post-apocalyptic books usually deal with, like, either the world about to end or ending or recently ended. This story happens decades or even centuries after the world has ended. And so there's some resemblance of civilization again because people have gotten over the world ending. And they do reference some, like, massive war in this particular issue. What the time frame of that war is, I don't know. I don't know if it's what led to all the kings or if it's what led to the downfall of the kings. But there was some kind of tragic event. Civilization went to crap. I'm assuming there was, like, a lot of tribalism and we started getting monarchies again. And now those monarchies are gone. And there's no real replacement government to take over the world. And so we just kind of have a lot of factions, it seems.
Okay, I mean, that's definitely interesting.
Yeah,
it's I guess the interesting thing about, you know, that theory is that we don't really see much ruin per se in the issue. You know, like, we see kind of a metropolis that seems to be like a future Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we see, you know, I like what seems to be urban cityscapes in Russia. But you know, like, I don't know. It's not what you would think of when you think of post-apocalypse.
Well, right. And that's why it's post-apocalypse. Cause I mean, you do see some ruin, like for example, the giant mech robots strewn around the landscape that are no longer operational, right? They're just kind of dead in the background. You do get to see those in a couple of pages. In particular, what is it, like the pretty early on, like the third, fourth page maybe? You do see these giant robots just kind of hanging out in the background of the city. And you don't see a lot of ruin in the city, I think, for a couple of reasons. Number one, if enough time has passed from this great war, then they would have already rebuilt, right? And so that's why I'm saying it's post-apocalyptic. Because you have enough time to rebuild. The apocalypse is already a thing of the past, right? So nobody's talking about it. Everyone's just kind of living in the moment. And I guess maybe dealing with the repercussions of the final king falling.
Okay. As far as, like the giant mechs and stuff, my reading was that, you know, like we start out the book and that's 20 years in the past. And I mean, I think that that is like the battle or involved in the conflict where, you know, Cauchy and whatever are getting overthrown. Because, you know, like we start out with, you know, mother giving birth to twins and she keeps saying like, shush, they're close. And like they are these giant robots that are duking it out.
Right.
And like you can see the house.
Yep.
Like at their feet. In the panel. So I think that that's like that battle is in my reading pretty recent, you know? So whatever the apocalypse is, maybe is much more distant.
Well, and I think the twins are Sasha and his brother, cause that's, he's looking for his brother.
Yes.
So my assumption is that's who the twins are. So yeah, it's not very long in the past, but I mean, even so, 20 years. Is a long enough time, I would assume, in a culture like this where there's no longer like a ruling body. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's just like apocalypse must not have been that bad, you know, because, you know, I don't know. Like, I think post-apocalypse, I think like Mad Max, you know, like it's all wasteland and stuff, you know, like clearly it's not a like a nuclear apocalypse.
Yeah, right.
So, and you know, like, they obviously have plenty of resources to rebuild.
Yep. And there is still some technology, right? Like, you get to meet a ninja-type dude at the end. I don't even know what he was.
But, oh, dude, they're, what are they called? Oprichniki.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is a historical term, I guess. Like, I think it's a term that was created by Ivan the Terrible, maybe?
Yep, that's correct.
Which, just as an aside, like, I was kind of wondering, in my reading of this, like what should we take with the obvious heavy influence of Russia in this? You know, like, is it a commentary on Russian history? Is it, you know, also a commentary on modern Russia? And, you know, I was grappling with that, I looked up Steve's Wikipedia page and the dude like majored in Russian studies and studied abroad in Russia. So I think that maybe it's just a super personal story that he wanted to tell.
Yeah, he's been doing that a lot lately. I don't know if you've read Crude that he does over at Image, but that's also heavy, heavy based on Russia.
Hmm.
It's a modern story, but it's set in Russia. So it can be a little daunting, I think, sometimes when you have Russian names and terminology, because they're not the easiest to pronounce if you're not familiar with them, you know?
Yeah, I was Googling a lot of stuff, dude. it took me a long time to get through this because I was like, what's this now?
Yeah.
I don't, like, trying to, like, you could probably pull a lot from context. Like, mm-hmm. as much as you need, but I definitely was like, am I missing something with all of these references.
Right, right, right. Yep, and I'm sure we are. But it was pretty interesting overall, though. Like I said, you can get lost a little easily, I think, because there are certain things that are set up and many things that are not. So I think for a first issue, it can be a little difficult to read. But, you know, that's one good thing about Aftershock is they always try – they never put out easy books, right? Like there's never one that you just read and you're like, okay, yeah, I understand this whole thing, right? All the books that Aftershock puts out really do give you a little food for thought. And I think this is one of those. And I'm curious to know where the story's going to go because it could only get more complicated from here, I would assume.
I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that they start to fill in, some of this, you know, history, obviously, that gets us to here, like I feel like that's a little mysterious. So hopefully there's payoff there. I also hope that we see some giant mechs in action before the end of it.
Well, you do get to see that giant bear mech in that one page.
Like right at, in the beginning?
Yeah.
And there's like robot horses at the end.
Yep, there sure is. There sure is. But not a whole lot of apparent tech though, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's still driving a pretty normal looking car, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if maybe the Oprichnik aren't the ones that kind of hold on to power by having access to technology, whereas everybody else either isn't allowed to use it or has decided not to use it based on this mech war that happened previously.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I have so many questions, man. Like, I don't even know where to begin, you know? Like, let's just throw one out. Thrice Nine. Is that a Cat's Cradle reference or is it just a coincidence? Maybe like a winking reference?
Maybe. Maybe Steve Orlando likes Thrice, the band.
Yeah, no, the Thrice is tight. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, also, like, I feel like they kind of hint at, you know, like, do you get the impression that Thrice Nine did something real bad to Amsterdam and, like, the people of Amsterdam? Hmm. You know, they kind of reference in passing about, like, basically, like, hey, you know, like, we had children too, like until Thrice Nine did something, you know, and like that's why we kind of, you know, lure you in and make you comfortable in this inn and then bring some goons over.
That's possible.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I mean, but now they're already in Russia again, so maybe that doesn't ever come back. You know. Also, you know, like I don't know. I was kind of, you know, I don't know how to feel about, like, the mother basically guilting her one son into risking his life to save the other son. Like, that seems like, you know, throwing good money after bad, except that maybe she feels like he's the unfaithful one, and this guy needs to make it up to her.
You talking about Stone Mary?
No, I'm talking about Sasha, you know?
Oh, okay.
Like he's basically signing on to a suicide mission that, like, you know, the best case scenario is like he rescues his brother, you know, but worst case scenario is he get captured forever and now like both sons are in prison.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think he cares, right? I think he's very aware of the possible consequences of going after his brother, even if it means him dying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I assumed that he was internalizing some guilt for leaving.
I'm sure part of the reason he's going after his brother is it's his fault. I think that's a pretty common literary trope where you have to go after whatever, after somebody because you feel responsible for them getting kidnapped or killed or whatever.
Well, it's so not.
I'm not surprised about that.
Like, it's not his fault that his brother is gay and like, therefore was picked up as a degenerate, you know? Like, that probably would have happened whether or not he was still there. But, you know, it's interesting that they chose to stay when he was compelled to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, just on a totally different topic, you know, I kind of was interested in the guilt trip that he lays on Stone Maria. where basically he's kind of like, you should do this, you know, like, you, like, she didn't know anything to him, but like, it kind of seems like he's trying to rally her into a revolutionary hero that, that makes a trip back to Russia, and she's going to like lead the revolution or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe they're just trying to set up that, you know, and like, that's going to be the grand arc of this, is, you know, like a personal story that works its way into like a big societal story. So anyway, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure where it's going. That's all.
I think that's fair. I'm not too certain myself. All right, let's rate this one up. I'm curious what you're going to rate it.
Well, I actually, you know, I feel a little better after our discussion. So I think I'm going to come in at 3.75 out of 5.
I'm going to go ahead and go with a 4. I found it really, really captivating. Even if I was confused, I think there's the setup has a lot of promise for me. I just hope we don't just get lost in the story of Sasha and we do learn a little bit more about how this world came to be. Cause that kind of stuff is really interesting to me. So 4 out of 5.
Well, they got to come back to Stone Maria, right? Like, she's coming back.
Oh, no
doubt.
Is that
safe to assume?
No doubt.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Next week, we have 2 books coming out. We have Clan Killers number 4 and Lost City Explorers number 5. So it should be a pretty good week. Maybe we'll be able to rescue Ronnie from the Red Realm. Who knows? If you want to get in touch with us, best place is on Twitter. Ronnie is at Rumbar316. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. And we'll catch you next time.